Welcome to the Sandwich Parenting Podcast. I am your host, Sherry Yuen Hunter. Here, we speak with amazing guests to make the world a better place by helping people heal from intergenerational trauma. Sandwich parents are in between the way we got parented and the way we now want to parent our children.
So let me start with psychologist Dr. Susan Campbell has worked as a professional speaker and a dating and relationship coach for over 35 years. She is the author of many books, including her groundbreaking The Couple's Journey. And her most recent book is From Triggered to Tranquil, and it's one of the best books I've ever read in my entire life. It's incredibly practical. It explains everything in a straightforward, logical way. I'm so incredibly excited to welcome Susan to the Sandwich Parenting Podcast. Welcome, Susan.
Thank you, Sherry.
Thank you so much for joining me. I think that my listeners, my clients, you know, lots of people who are trying to do the work are going to learn so much from you, just from the podcast, but also when they read your books. So I am such a fangirl. I'm still kind of thinking, oh my gosh, I can't believe she said yes. So thank you for joining us.
I love that, Sherry. Thank you.
I know, I'm still giggling. Okay, so my first question for you is, your books and work are all about relationships. They're about couples. They're about, you know, friendships. Like, it's all about between people, the relationships. So I'm actually curious about your origin story. Why do you do what you do? And why do you think you've been doing it for 35 years?
Well, it goes back to my childhood.
Yeah, so of course.
Activities go back to, you know, yeah. Where did the motivation come from? And I grew up in a home where my parents made it really safe to be me, and they were quite different in their personalities. And so as a smart little kid, I would watch, boy, they're so different, but they get along well. They use humor. They hug a lot. And I just feel so happy to have them as parents, so lucky. Okay, so I thought relationships were easy when I was growing up. And then when I was 21 years old, I got married. And I realized, gee, you know, I think it looks so easy, even though I had all these advantages, you know, fairly secure in my relationship to life. You know, we had some differences that were just really painful for me. And that marriage ended in divorce, got me very curious about, whoa, if I can't do it, because I had gone into marriage, you know, basically not believing in divorce. Well, that had to change. You know, I made myself really wrong for thinking about it. I came of age in the 50s, Sherry. We still wore, even in high school, we still wore girdles, curled our hair just perfect. And oh, it was a constrained culture that I grew up in. But getting divorced helped free me from a lot of that conditioning of having to be just perfect, the good girl who does everything by the book. And that was actually a blessing. But I became extremely curious from my own failure about, well, what does it take to make relationships work? So I started out and interviewed a whole bunch of couples. And the book that came out of that was The Couple's Journey. And I actually interviewed in depth 50 couples, and then another 150 I researched through questionnaires and phone calls following up. We didn't have computers then, but I did bring a tape recorder into people's homes and asked them to tell me kind of like the secret of your success, but more than that, like how your relationship changed over time and stuff like that. So through my own pain is what got me interested in relationship.
That's where motivation does come for most people, as in, okay, well, that was really painful. I don't want other people to go through it. Uh-huh. And so let me figure this out for me, and then I can figure it out for other people. And so this has kept your interest for over 35, like you've kept going with this.
I mean, I've been doing this over 55 years now, Sherry.
Oh, 50. Okay. Well, I was looking at old information.
Yeah. You have an old bio, maybe from my website or something. Yeah. 55 years. I can't believe it. And I am still learning from my clients.
Give me an example of something that you're learning from your clients. I think that doing the work does involve learning all the time. Like, I don't think anybody can ever, ever, ever be perfect at this.
One of the things that I'm learning is how many layers of unconsciousness there are in people. And I'll work with a couple for a while and help them get to their deepest fears, at least what we think are their deepest fears. And they'll go along for a while without me. Then they'll come back a year later and there's more stuff under there to deal with. It's like the unconscious like repressed psychological material, mm-hmm. and that mostly revolves around fears around your own mm-hmm. psychological safety and mm-hmm. loved, am I good enough? Those basic core fears, they are camouflaged in so many different disguises that delude you about who you are. And so I guess the main thing I keep learning is two things, the power of self-deception, because I want myself as good. So it's like, I hate to say this because I want people to trust themselves, but honestly, I don't want you to trust everything that you think if it's a self-serving belief or idea, because the ego is just full of that. But I've been lucky enough to get clients who are excited about these kinds of discussions.
Yes.
They really allow me into their secret places, and I feel so privileged.
I hear you, because you said a couple of things that really resonated with me, which is you really want people to believe in themselves. And I think that we do want people to start to hope about that they can, mm-hmm. you know, get to a place of authenticity, that they can get to a place of good relationships. So we want them to learn to trust themselves. But at the same time, in doing that work, they also have to be very good at challenging themselves, because what you said about self-deception and the ego being so incredibly strong, and each time you uncover a layer, you're like, oh great, like, you know, look, we've uncovered that layer. And it's like, then your subconscious goes, now we can handle the next layer.
It's never ending. And those of us who have made learning and development as our mm-hmm. major goal in life, we're going to be a lot better off than people who have made looking good and that sort of thing their main goal. The secret to my happiness is that everything's for learning.
Everything's for learning. That's so beautiful. Everything's for learning. I love that. I love that. So I'm curious now, because there's this amazing book that you wrote called Getting Real. And it's about the 10 truth skills that we need to live an authentic life. And so my question to you is, why is it so important for us to live an authentic life? And what is it about these 10 truth skills that will get us there?
Well, a minute ago, I talked about the tendency for the ego to filter the information you're getting from the environment to build yourself up in a false way. And you know, so many of us just have conditioned beliefs about ourselves that are actually negative, and that's false too. You know, that's the most harmful false beliefs are the ones that I alluded to a minute ago. I'm not lovable. I'm not good enough, that sort of thing. And so through seeing clients all these years, what I've discovered is the journey is about getting free from your conditioning. And when I say your conditioning, I mean all those learned habits that you may have learned in order to survive in an unsafe environment, perhaps in your childhood, or only partially safe. Maybe you're only safe in certain situations. So you may have grown up with beliefs and patterns that are like, don't talk back to somebody in authority. You know, just go along to get along. Some people make that their little rule of life. Starts out in childhood. And what the book Getting Real is about helping you see those patterns that were survival strategies in childhood. Like maybe it wasn't safe to speak up to an authority because the authority was unreasonable or punitive or drunk, you know? So we have to unlearn what was learned, the faulty learning. I call it learning the wrong thing. We have to unlearn the faulty learning through our adult relationships. And the 10 true skills, the getting real true skills, are all about noticing when you're coming from something that's present and that you can specifically name. Like, I saw that person walk out the door when I was talking. I made that mean the same thing I used to make it mean when I was a little kid and I was trying to get attention at the family dinner table and couldn't.
And no one would listen to me, and they just poo-pooed everything that I said. And they told me, don't talk so loudly. You know, the adults are talking now, or something like that. Not that that was, you know, what happened in my family. But
sounds familiar to a lot of our listeners. Yeah. Though, for sure. And things like that. So you make up these assumptions about how the world is going to be treating you, or what's it safe to do and not do. And so the getting real practices help you notice when those are going on. Notice when you're on automatic pilot. Oh, there I am doing that same thing of smiling and nodding to make somebody think I'm listening when I'm really scared. You know, I'm really scared. I won't have anything to say. So I hope they'll just keep talking and I'll just keep smiling and nodding. There's all different patterns like that. When they become onto this idea of what you do is on automatic based on your conditioning, people in my groups and my clients, they get excited and they want to become free from those things.
Well, and it's as soon as they want to, then they can actually practice, right? Yes. It's if they can't quite see it, it's harder. Like you almost have to like spend some time to convince them. But as soon as they see it, they're like, oh, yeah. I want to be free from this. Right. So now I'm curious, though, because you also mentioned that, you know, you came from a place where your family had a good relationship. Right. Yeah. And so even with the privilege of experiencing and having role modeling of good relationships, mm-hmm. you still also could see that this is what's happening, right? And so many people come from dysfunctional families, abusive, traumatic backgrounds. And so they have a lot of coping mechanisms that kind of are trying to protect them, right? And so how does this book land maybe differently or not, or maybe they don't, but does it land differently for someone who has a healthier nervous system as opposed to someone who has really struggled, but harder in quotes, but harder kind of way?
So in a way, I think we're talking now about the book From Triggered to Tranquil, because From Triggered to Tranquil is like my latest book that I wrote during COVID because there was more time, I had more free time, but I'm so glad I did. And that book addresses your conditioned patterns in a very deep way and looks at how you may have wounds to your self-esteem, to your sense of safety. The whole purpose of From Triggered to Tranquil is not that different from the purpose of the book Getting Real. It's to be able to, in any given moment, pause and check in with yourself and feel, am I coming from an automatic place? Now, people who have been deeply wounded as children have more layers of protection, let's just say.
Yes, yes.
It'll take a stronger, loving relationship, help them heal out of that. Mm. But I kind of want to add in, you know, this is an aside, that even though I had good parents and a really happy childhood, my mother had trouble nursing me. And that became a trauma for me. I mean, that was a trauma. I could not get enough milk. And she was anxious because her milk was not coming down and it was painful. And this is true for a lot of mothers.
Yes.
So you may provide the happiest home for your children, but some of those little things, those tiny communications between mother and child at a very early age still might leave lasting scars. So for me, the lasting scars, and I talk about in an autobiographical way in the book Getting Real, how even me, you know, who was secure, I thought, I realized later in my marriage, I couldn't ask for what I wanted. And can you see how that might be related to sucking on the breast? And the more I suck, the mother's getting more and more upset and uncomfortable and frustrated.
That is so confusing. So confusing.
Like if I have wants, that makes other people unhappy.
Yes.
And that was a deep belief that came in my childhood. So, you know, I can't claim to be not wounded.
Oh my goodness. You know? I just had an aha moment.
Yeah.
So I have two kids and they're 2 years apart and they're very, very different personality. One just seems to think things are, you know, that he just kind of sees the world in he's just a more easygoing kind of person. And the other one, you know, feels a lot more stress. He feels a lot more fear about a lot of different things. And he's, you know, often a little bit nervous about asking for help. And I just realized, interesting enough, it never occurred to me that this could be a part of it. But when I had one, there was you couldn't stop the milk from squirting out. Like, it was just like, it was like an explosion of milk. And for the other one, it wasn't as much. And he was an anxious eater. So he would pop on and off, on and off, on and off. And for whatever reason, he was distressed, but that actually stressed me out. So, you know, I would be like, what is wrong? What is wrong with this kid? You know, and at some point in time, I'd have to like pass him off to someone else because I was so frustrated with like, do you want milk or you don't want milk? You want milk or you don't want milk? And like I said, I wish I told you earlier before we started recording, but I wish I had read these books, you know, before, because I think that a lot of it goes back to that he's feeling anxious and worried about himself. Whereas the other one is just more like, oh, they said that. Well, I don't care. It's not about me. And it's like, what? You don't even question that it might be about you? And he's like, no. You know, like it's not about him.
What a great example of how what happens at the breast stays with us. Not for everyone, because many people, what happens at the breast then gets eclipsed by other experiences that are much more dramatic. But the younger something happens that's frustrating to the little person, the more protection we learn to put up around it, because we were exceedingly fragile. The younger you are, the more fragile you are, and the less safe it is to be around anything that challenges your survival.
Well, and just, you know, you mentioned that you found it hard to express your needs. Well, as a baby at the breast, the only way for us to express our needs was to cry. And by crying, we probably stressed out our mothers even more, which meant that the more we actually tried to communicate, the more stress hormones were coming through the milk. and the mirror neurons too at the same time, like all of this, which just makes it worse and worse and worse.
Yeah, that's going to negatively reinforce crying.
All of it, right.
My mother said I slept a lot. So, I mean, what does that tell you? I'm avoiding contact. Wow. I'm avoiding getting myself in that frustrating position where I want something, and that's, and I'll put it in quotes, you know, making somebody else uncomfortable.
100%. Oh, sorry. I just have to like sit with this for a minute because, you know, even just like I'm thinking about when I was born, I was born in Taiwan. And back then, the doctors told everybody to buy formula. The mothers were actually told not to nurse because formula was better for the kid. Like, I don't have a great relationship with eating. Let's just put it that way. Because I can never get enough food. Like, for me, it's just like, I want to eat, I want to eat, I want to eat. And my mom told me the story of when I was a baby, the nurses would feed me, three ounces, and then book, you know, like coming out of the mouth, book. And then whoosh, you know, the baby would cry, and they're okay, well, then we're going to add half an ounce. Okay. So 3.5 ounces. Mm-hmm. And then they would, you know, and the next time it'd be like, book, oh, wow, not enough. And they would add half an ounce, add half an ounce, until at some point they said, oh, Mrs. Yuan, we can't add any more formula for your baby. Like, this is too much. And so they kept it at whatever was deemed 7 ounces, you know, whatever was deemed to be normal. And I'm like, oh my gosh, I just had another aha moment. So, you know, I've spent my whole life wanting to eat.
Yeah. Food. You didn't get enough
at the time.
You really, really needed it, because each infant is unique. And those cookie cutter approaches.
Oh my gosh.
Parenting there. I mean, I'm getting so sad now as I'm listening to you. And, you know, my mother was in the era in the U.S. where they read this book by Dr. Spock.
Dr. Spock,
Baby
yes.
in Childcare. I still remember seeing it.
I remember,
back. And it apparently, I actually never read it, but my mother told me later that it said, let your baby cry it out.
Cry it out.
Which, you know, they let me do. They let me, you know, lay there hungry. And that's, you know, that's another trauma to the little beings. Survival, you know, food is a survival issue. So I have food issues too, Sherry. You know, they've kind of gone away.
Yeah.
So, you know, maybe up until I was about 40 years old, I kind of would overeat a little bit, binge purge or any of that. Then I would get really mad at myself, be really good for a couple of days. You know, the yo-yo dieting thing.
I've done that for most of my life. And
I always had the 5 extra pounds, that bit, you know.
Yeah. No. Well, thank you for normalizing that. And I do feel that in doing this work, I'm starting to feel like I want to have a healthier relationship with food in a more organic sense, right? Not in the like, oh, I need to count my calories. Like I just, those things don't really.
You know, I'm going to tell our listeners how I healed myself.
Yes, please.
Through my, you know, I was basically, you know, food was love.
Yeah, I know.
Me,
I hear you.
You know, for a lot of us. And these practices that I teach in the book From Triggered to Tranquil involve when you're hurting, like when you're triggered by your child, your husband, the person down the street, you know, your parent, you're an adult, but you're triggered by your own parent. That means that some old fear about myself is being activated. And for me, it was fear of abandonment, fear that there's nobody going to be there with me. So that's, in a way, fear of loss of love. And so when I would get triggered by my next husband, we learned to, you know, use these tools then. We were psychologists, but when I would get triggered by him, I learned, and I also learned this from working with clients, to pause and feel.
Yeah, I love that.
What this is. Maybe it's anger at first or judgment toward him. You know, he's not capable of intimacy, but all of those kinds of things, anger, fear, judgment. Those are signs that I have been emotionally triggered. And 100%. We're talking right now about attachment triggers, the kind of triggers that mimic early childhood, neglect, abuse, that sort of thing. So when I would feel that, I would pause and just let myself feel it more. And, you know, I was practicing meditation and some other spiritual practices where you use the breath. And I learned to use the breath to open up a big, loving, spacious, almost like good mother, you know, put my hands around myself, you know, or put my hands in a big space around myself so that as I'm breathing and feeling, it's almost like mother and child again. It's like a big part of me is shining light or loving attention on the wounded part, the part that started out being angry or frustrated. I can just be like that for, well, you know, for a while. It would take me 15 minutes to calm down after a trigger reaction, like having hurt feelings. But now it's like 7 seconds or less.
Yes. Yes. Well, the practice, your nervous system is able to respond more quickly to kind of like that reparenting that you're like that mother love that you're giving yourself. That's so powerful. And I agree. My experience too, what I didn't realize was triggers were lasting a couple of weeks. I didn't know that. Like I felt a little bit dysfunctional, you know, for a couple of weeks. And now doing the work for a while, it would come down to about a day or two, you know, and then slowly it's becoming like, oh, okay, well, because I'm allowing myself to feel, I can process it and it doesn't stick anymore. But I don't know if I can get it down to 7 seconds, but I will. Now I know it's possible.
I've been doing it a long time. I wrote this book in order to show other people that we can all do this. It you know, it takes a willingness to do a little bit of a practice to actually learn to notice when you're triggered. And that the main reason I wrote this From Triggered to Tranquil book, Sherry, is because so many people feel shame when they see themselves getting upset, you know, oh, I'm too sensitive, or oh, I, you know, blow up at the drop of a hat, and that's what caused all these failed relationships. So, you know, people are kind of hard on themselves, and there's a gentler approach while still really taking yourself by the shoulders and saying, you know, yes, you are triggered, and that is not a place you want to stay, but it's the beginning of showing you where you need some healing, what part of you needs some TLC, some mothering, some compassion. And so we almost like have to get triggered if we're ever going to heal our childhood wounds and become fully functioning adults.
I love that so much. I love that so much. Many of my clients are Asian moms, And they're actually quite sometimes disconnected from feelings. Like they don't even know that they're actually being, so they think that they've gone from zero to for no reason. And just that idea of the pause and just that idea of the awareness, I think, is such a powerful tool. And then I love that you're saying, you know, observing this without shame, because then if after they get triggered and after they've had a reaction, they're consumed by shame, like this whole cycle is just a big spiral that takes you into deep, dark places. So I love this book. It's practical, it's logical, it's gentle, it's firm. I like what you said, which is, you know, no shame for having the triggered response and the triggered reaction, but still a bit of an accountability, as in, hey, you know what, let me take myself by the shoulders and say, as much as it's not my fault that I'm doing this, I want to work on this, which I love. You know, secret, I love this book so much that sometimes I'll even play the audiobook as I'm falling asleep, just to sort of hear it and be reminded, and maybe hopefully, you know, kind of brainwash myself at night. Yes.
Yeah. Well, I wrote it in a way to be an experience for the reader, to actually, just by reading it, I'm going through some
100%.
In relationship to my deeper self.
Every time I read a paragraph, I'm just sitting there, like just sinking in it and just going like, can anyone write this more perfectly? Like I'm just, my head's about to fall off because I'm nodding as I'm, you know, reading every single sentence. It's life-changing, you know? So I guess one of my questions then for you would be, what did you like most about writing this book and why?
Well, as we said earlier, people like to look good. You know, Asian moms, you know, they want to feel good. They don't want to think, oh, I'm triggerable, or they don't want to think there's some deficit inside. Mm-hmm. So I'm framing almost like the purpose of life to be your own inner development. And if you can take on, and I kind of try to make it very attractive. So it's a courageous path. But to me, it's the only path that makes any sense if you want to be happy with yourself, you know, because if you have to be totally, you know, some model, some cookie cutter model of the good mother who never gets angry or anything like that, or never has selfish thoughts, you know.
Right. That's a good point.
No, because you're not going to be able to do that. So you're going to fail. But if you make your goal learning and development and discovering new parts about yourself. And I really think I make self-discovery kind of fun.
Yeah.
In all of my books, you know, I've written 11 books. So, you know, if people go to my website, they'll see all of them, but they all try to help you kind of get into a new game, which is the game of self-development and learning and growth. And honestly, it's very empowering to go, oh, I used to think, when I was nice to people, that I was a good person all the time. But sometimes when I'm nice, I'm avoiding saying something that I really need to speak about. And the book Getting Real gives you tools for speaking about difficult things, honestly, in a way that doesn't turn people off. So the Getting Real is like communication skills to be able to be your true self in relationship. And then the thing that gets in the way of you being more self-aware and being really true to yourself is the protection patterns that are based on childhood wounds or childhood unfinished business. So, you know, the I guess from triggered to tranquil is like the last thing people need to learn.
Oh, so
it's going to be my last book, you know.
No, it's not. You're going to write more books, but
I'm actually making notes for a memoir right now.
Oh, I can't wait to read that. This book is so easy to read, because sometimes when you read the trauma books, it can be a little bit triggering. Sometimes when you're reading self-help books, there's a little bit of toxic positivity in it sometimes, you know, where it's like, just do it, or, you know, just think on the bright side, you know, just build your habits. Like there's kind of like a set of self-help books that actually are a little bit shame inducing if you are dealing with a lot of unprocessed childhood wounds. And then with some of the trauma wounds, which are amazing because they really do help you understand things. Some of them have so much science in them. And I don't, I'm not saying I don't like it. I do. But at the same time, it's like, I don't think I need to know it to that level.
Yeah.
You know, I need to know enough to understand what's going on. And then some of the stories or the way it's written can be a little bit re-triggering. I find that you kind of combine all of those, but in a way where I can read it. I'm not stopping every paragraph to like try to catch my breath because I'm feeling with, you know, obviously through my own filters of, mm-hmm. of how I'm reading things, but just so healing. The way you write is so healing.
Yeah, I did write an earlier book that had more science in it, but it was called 5-Minute Relationship Repair. And it does go for those readers.
Well, I've got friends who are nerds, right? Yeah.
Like science.
Yeah. No, I've got friends like that. They're the nerds. They want to know. Yeah.
You know, get that one. This From Trigger to Tranquil is one book later. And I wanted to make it just so simple, just the essential science.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. No, it's there. It's there. It's just, it doesn't feel overwhelming. Like it feels like, yep, no, this makes sense. I love it. I love it. I love everything about you. I love all your books and your website. We'll have to read all of them right now. I found you through From Triggered to Tranquil. And now I'm going to go back and read the other ones. I want to thank you so much for the time together. And I have one last question for you, because most of my clients and listeners are what we call sandwich parents. So, you know, we were perhaps brought up a certain way. We could be immigrants or people who have grown up in a religious environment, but, you know, perhaps they were brought up a certain way. And now perhaps they have very consciously chosen respectful parenting, peaceful parenting, conscious parenting, you know, a different way to parent their child. And they want to raise responsible adults of the future, but they may have trauma of their own.
Yeah.
Right. So if you could give them one piece of advice, what would that be?
Well, first, I would say admit that you probably learned some faulty things from your early upbringing, even if you weren't traumatized. You know, you probably just learned some rigid rules about how to be. So I'm going to give you two things. And so be open to noticing then when you do get, and you're saying, you know, your goal is to be respectful and loving, of course, with your children and not blow up at them and have them feel unsafe. But admit that you probably did learn some things and your child isn't going to conform to the way you were raised, you know, because like the birth practices in Taiwan and even in the 50s in the US, the child rearing practices, you know, they sucked. And some of the early things that our parents did, I mean, they were just a little naive because we've learned more. So some of your kids are going to be different than what you're prepared for, maybe.
Mm.
And, you know,
I like that. I like that.
You and you may do things either internally or outside, like, you know, yelling or criticizing or something like that. As soon as you can catch yourself, develop a pause practice. I think
I love that.
Pause and self-regulate. We all need learn. I mean, if you're going to be a parent, it is your responsibility to learn good tools for going, whoops, I'm a little off here. I'm not sure what it is. Maybe it's just a judgmental thought, you know, No slamming doors, but I'm a little off here. Let me breathe. The pause basically is a self-calming moment when you say, and you might even say to your child, you're in the middle of a discussion about, you know, can I start going out with boys or whatever it is, and you're triggered, you go, oh, I'm overwhelmed. You have to say to the other person, I need a moment. And then just, or say it to yourself silently, slow conscious breathing to regulate your nervous system. Then you can do the self-compassion stuff later on when you have time, but the basic self-regulation, self-calming, stop before you do too much damage. That's the idea here. We all need a pause practice. Even if it's just you jump into scary conclusions about, oh, well, then she's going to be in cars and this is going to happen and that's going to happen. When your mind starts doing that, oh, my nervous system's agitated. Learned to notice that fairly soon after it starts happening. I say pause to myself, I calm myself down, and then I'm back in the game again where I can be respectful to my child and to everybody else.
I love that so much. I mean, that definitely jumped out in the book, the pause, that tool, pause. It's so powerful. Susan, I want to thank you so much for taking the time to speak with me and to speak with our listeners. I think that everyone should read at least one of your 11 books, and I'm waiting with bated breath for your memoir coming out. Thank you for what you do. You make the world a better place. And I just am so appreciative of who you are.
Thank you, Sherry. And thank you for what you do. You provide a wonderful service too. So I'm also appreciating you.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for listening to the Sandwich Parenting Podcast. I hope, like me, you've learned something new that will help you along with your parenting journey. If you wish, you can always connect with me at www.sandwichparenting.com.